Back in May 2020, Heidi interviewed Dr. Beth Watson, clinical psychologist, for a breaking news segment about some of the mental health challenges that healthcare workers are facing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This topic is so important that we felt it critical to explore it more. To do that, we're going to dedicate the snacks for September and October to this topic. So today I'm here with Dr. Bernard Chang, who's both an emergency physician and has a PhD in clinical psychology. Bernard is the vice chair of research at Columbia in the Department of Emergency Medicine. Bernard, welcome to MRAP.
Thanks, Swami. Really a big honor to be here.
Bernard, why are you specifically interested in this particular area?
I've had a longstanding interest in behavioral health and mental health. As you were saying before, I was a psychologist before going to medical school, and I've really carried that interest in the behavioral mental health aspects of acute care in my work as an emergency physician. So I've looked at it from patients like stroke survivors or folks with like myocardial infarctions and looking at their psychological recovery from their diseases. And we found that oftentimes a lot of the experience of both the hospital environment and the acute care environment in particular has really influenced kind of the development of psychological downstream effects. And I started thinking, well, we've seen this in patients, but what about providers? You know, we're in there in the emergency departments, you know, day in, day out for years on end. And so it's really kind of stimulated interest in my interest with provider well-being and psychological health.
Now, we have stressful jobs. I don't think anyone would argue with that. We see psychological trauma on a regular basis. We see child abuse. We see the death of patients. This affects us to the core. But the COVID pandemic was different. It was particularly harsh on healthcare workers. And I'm hoping that you can give us a little bit of an idea of why. Why was this particularly harsh for us to deal with?
Well, I think it comes down to a couple of different levels of analysis. I agree completely. So, I mean, we see some really, traumatic things kind of in our daily practice. But I think what's been really unique about the COVID-19 pandemic is while we have this hero worship, you know, for example, here in New York, we have this like daily applause for frontline essential staff. Many clinicians, if you really kind of like corner them and talk with them, they really feel unsupported. I think from a systems level, you know, with concerns about essential equipment, PPE, testing. But then also, I think there's this question of a fear for not just a well-being for your patients, but for a well-being for yourselves. I mean, I know that probably this is probably the first time in my professional career where I did feel a little bit fearful going into work just because I knew that there's a lot of things that I didn't understand or didn't know about with transmission. And you also worry about how it could impact your family too. And I think finally, with a whole society changes as well, you do have with these restrictions and this distancing, a lot of the traditional social support methods that we have in place, you know, your family, your friends, you know, going out to hang out with some close contacts, all that has been really kind of like removed for us, you know, during this time. And we're a bit untethered from our social nutrients that have usually helped us.
And the COVID-19 pandemic really brought these issues to light, specifically with providers. There were lots of articles in the mainstream press about how healthcare workers were suffering. What did you see in your group?
Just speaking from a firsthand personal experience, we've really seen some unprecedented historic things in like the emergency department. I think that on one level, both the providers, the patients, across the board, we've really experienced extraordinary stress. I would say particularly among the providers, we've been seeing stress both not just for our own well-being, but also our families and our close others. So I think that there's been a significant amount of psychological stress throughout this pandemic, particularly hitting these frontline workers.
While we haven't seen a pandemic like this in the last 100 years or so, we do have some recent similar scares with SARS in 2002, 2003, and Ebola just a couple of years ago, or at least it feels like it was just a couple of years ago. Is there data or evidence from those periods of time about what healthcare workers experienced?
Yeah, it's a great question. There actually has been a pretty good body of literature that's looked at this over the last few decades, starting as early with emergency health service providers from 9/11. We found that a lot of these healthcare workers experience significant degrees of psychological stress, acute stress disorder, including post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic stress disorder. We found that among those individuals, we see about 10% of those individuals going on to having more long-term psychological effects from these incidents. We've seen similar data also with SARS in 2002 and 2003, as well as Ebola from a few years ago. And I think for me, what's really concerning is not just so much that there are these short-term effects impacting healthcare providers, but you're also seeing some of what I call more durable or long-term effects long after the pandemic or the disaster has been addressed.
It's early to get substantial data on this particular pandemic, on the COVID-19 pandemic, and definitely too early to get long-term data. We're going to have to wait for that. But what evidence do we have so far as to the mental health effects on healthcare workers?
Well, we've had a number of initial survey reports coming out over the last few months. There was an article out in JAMA Open that looked at a number of the healthcare providers coming out of Wuhan, China, and they found some pretty alarming rates of depression and anxiety symptoms. Almost 50% of the providers were having endorsing symptoms. I think concerning to that too is you're seeing similar rates among other providers around the world. So there's also a similar survey done among the Italian frontline providers with similar rates. And even here at the United States, we've been seeing that. We just recently published a paper in General Hospital Psychiatry of about 600 providers here at Columbia. And we found approximately 50 to 60% of frontline providers were endorsing acute stress symptoms. And what was most concerning for me was that we were seeing it at higher rates among like the trainees, the house staff. So a lot of the younger providers were really the most vulnerable for the development of some of these psychological symptoms. Now, we could see it also in potentially EMS or other frontline providers, but we just don't have that data right now.
50 to 60% sounds high. Bernard, I have a hard time believing that the rate isn't closer to 100%. Because everyone I know, everyone that I'm working with, even the most stable people, the people who never seem to let anything faze them, even they're having a little bit of anxiety, even if it's just a little bit of anxiety with sleep, a little bit of difficulty with sleeping, waking up having a little bit of dread about that shift that you're going in for. I haven't spoken with anybody that doesn't have some of these thoughts going through their head. And perhaps the issue that we see with trainees is that they're more likely to be honest and forward about what it is that they're feeling. But I have a hard time believing that everyone isn't experiencing a little bit of this, but that doesn't mean that everyone's going to have long-term effects.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very good point that you're bringing up, Swami. And I think that one of the key things I really want to emphasize too is that a lot of these reactions that all of us are experiencing right now throughout this pandemic are what you'd say almost adaptive or natural responses to extraordinarily stressful situations. And so we don't want to pathologize everything, our reactions to kind of these anxiety-provoking situations. And the bulk of evidence from both the past pandemics and previous disasters shows that, you know, most of us are going to be okay, that most of us, while we're all experiencing some degree of distress at this moment, the bulk of evidence suggests that we will be okay in the long run. That's the good news. I would say the bad news, though, is that I think there will be a significant minority of folks among our community who will be at risk of developing not just the short-term psychological sequelae, but also long-term mental health issues, including post-traumatic stress disorder and major depression from these episodes. So I think it really boils down to two questions. I think first, how do we support the bulk of providers who will be experiencing stress, which is kind of within the normative range of things? And then secondly, for that smaller group of individuals who are really vulnerable for long-term effects, how do I identify and support those folks and prevent, you know, some of the development of some of these longer term sequelae?
The words post-traumatic stress disorder get thrown around a lot, but in the world of psychology, they mean something very specific. And I don't want to get too semantic. Our listeners don't necessarily care about the exact definition, but when you say PTSD, what exactly are you talking about?
I'm just kind of nerding out a little bit on like the specific like DSM criteria, you know, both is a function of duration of time as well as both several specific psychological and somatic symptoms. It's a checklist of sorts. But I think that we really need to kind of consider when we're like thinking about this, you know, from what I call like a practical standpoint, you know, here on the front line is really understanding, you know, trying to separate clinical diagnosis from really just a broad reaction to some of the stress. And one of the complicated things about this with PTSD is that we already know that emergency providers, we are very vulnerable for the development of psychological stress, such as burnout, for lack of a better word, and how burnout interacts with moral injury, interacting with the psychological stress experienced from this disaster is all very murky. But ultimately, at the end of the day, from a practical standpoint and from how we want to intervene is how is this manifesting in the well-being of our providers? And I think, you know, shying away from some of the semantics of what's PTSD versus acute stress disorder and focusing really on how it's impacting our providers is probably the higher priority, I would say, for all of us here on the front line for our colleagues.
Can we predict which of our healthcare worker brethren are going to develop PTSD in this environment and then tailor or at least focus on that group of people so that we can help them more?
It's a great question. So I think that it's a combination. So if you look at a lot of the post-traumatic stress literature, there's both a number of different variables, what I call state and trait variables, that things that, you know, either person's an individual's disposition or previous history of mental health. But then there's also a lot of things around the environment. And this is similar to a lot of the work that I do on looking at clinician well-being, is we really talk about like the occupational stressors associated with clinician well-being. And I think that in terms of trying to predict individuals who might be at risk for developing PTSD, some of the state trait factors are a little bit outside of our control, of course, but what we can control here is thinking about the environment. So we do know that, for example, things such as crowding, patient volume, acuity, things that we see commonly, but how they're organized in our systems has a significant effect on development of longer term stress among patients and providers. I think also thinking about this idea of the occupational, the way that we carry our shifts or the shift stacking, all these things combined from the occupational end of things can actually lead to the development of these longer term psychological risks.
One of the things that came to light right after the severe surges in New York and New Jersey was that many psychologists and psychiatrists were offering services to healthcare workers, even for free, but few healthcare workers were taking advantage of it. Why do you think that was the case?
I think it boils down to what I personally think is a kind of this culture of the superhero in emergency medicine. And I think that Mel Herbert really, you know, hit the nail on the head when he really kind of talked about this, in the sense that we really are, as emergency providers, these heroic clinicians that can address, you know, are ready to prepare for treat anyone, anytime, anywhere. But I think the what I call like the flip side of the superhero complex is that it does make it a challenge for us to recognize our own vulnerability or address that we need some help or need some support. And I think that it can even lead to many of us to cope with our stress in maladaptive ways. And so I think it really boils down also to two broad things too. I think there's just what I call skepticism, professional skepticism. I think that, you know, we as emergency physicians in general are a pretty skeptical bunch. And I think it's great in terms of like, you know, poking around with evidence, and we want to like really just kind of ask why. And I think a lot of us may roll our eyes a bit about when we talk about feelings or these subjective, really unquantifiable metrics as wellness. But since we're such a data-driven bunch, but I do think that it's really, really important to recognize kind of, this is probably some of the work that I've done, is trying to show that there are like these tangible effects from not addressing this. And then I think also there's something about professional consequences. I just recently filled out my recertification or like my recredentialing for my local institution. And I was pretty shocked. There's still this kind of like checkbox for talking about if you have, you know, a history of mental health conditions. And I think we're scared about that. I think from a professional standpoint, that if I go and seek help, will this be marked on my record, and will this kind of hurt me professionally? So I think that there is also this specter of the professional consequences of admitting vulnerability that also plays a role into kind of having folks not seek the help when they should get some.
And I really hope that we're seeing so many of the healthcare workers who are affected by this, hopefully so many that will go and seek care, that we can get those parts of our credentialing paperwork and our licensing paperwork stricken off of them, because it really doesn't belong there. We should be seeking help. That shows that we're developed enough to recognize that we need help because we want to stay in these jobs, and we need to have that removed once and for all, just so that we can go about and do the things that we need to and get the support that we need as well. This can't all be doom and gloom. And while we're not trying to teach emergency clinicians to provide mental health, there are validated treatments and some potential new ones as well. For the majority of healthcare workers who won't develop PTSD, I think some of them are going to feel like, well, if I'm not going to develop PTSD, why don't I just tough through this on my own? But there are still reasons to seek care. So what treatment modalities would be offered to that group of people?
I think that cognitive behavioral therapy has been really kind of tailored and really well suited for a lot of emergency physicians. And the reason why I say that is it rests along the assumption of that there is some type of logical stream for why you're having these fears. And it tries to get to the construct or what you call schema of what's driving some of those fears. So, for example, talking specifically about COVID, It could talk about the schema of fear. And when we talk about what does a schema of fear really boil down to, we can talk about fear for yourself, fear for your family, frustration with kind of like the overall health response. And I think tackling those things in kind of what I call bite-sized pieces in some ways gives us, now I'm not speaking as a patient, some clarity in terms of where the next steps to go forward with. And I think that's hopefully could be one strategy, for example, for at least helping people kind of begin to kind of like tackle or process what they've been experiencing over the last few months.
What about the group of healthcare workers that does experience PTSD or does develop PTSD? What therapies are directed towards that group?
With all of mental health, I think it's really a two-step approach. I think the first is really destigmatization. And I think that that's kind of like the big lift, I would say, from both all of us as colleagues, as well as administrators and just the overall society, to really kind of encourage those individuals to seek help and, you know, normalize that it's okay professionally and personally to seek help. I think also the second step really is trying to get a lot of these folks plugged into the mental health system. I know that obviously there's the traditional methods of face-to-face encounters with a mental health care professional. In this day and age, obviously with the pandemic, we have more remote telepsychiatry, telemedicine. But I also would encourage there have now been this flourishing of in this digital age of a number of like digital approaches, like digital apps that have actually had some initial encouraging evidence. There's some data from the VA that's looked at a PTSD app that has really tried to kind of do this kind of guided, basically bare-bone CBT approach to individuals. And what's great about it is that it's really tailored more towards the military folks, but a lot of the concepts are still kind of ring true for any type of provider. And I think that, you know, having those type of resources could be something that could be a significant use for a lot of folks who are seeking help.
Knowing what we know now, knowing that we could have another surge or another pandemic in front of us, what types of systems should we be building to support healthcare workers from the start?
So I think that aside from the operational logistical challenges that we're going to anticipate with the, you know, the next event, we now know just based on this bulk of evidence that there's going to be also this parallel psychological surge of stress that not just in patients, but also particularly among healthcare providers. So we need to really rethink very, very carefully from a disaster standpoint, both the staffing models that optimize, you know, or minimize clinician fatigue while also, ensuring good patient care. Also thinking about resources for providers as well. I think that we've learned now just qualitatively about some of the challenges with like family care, things that we take for granted, like transport, daily life disruptions that we really kind of need to think about and factor in as the frontline providers are kind of called to service again. And then lastly, I think we really need to think about the mental health support for providers and trying to think early identification as well as a destigmatization. And lastly, kind of creating this library of resources that can provide our providers, you know, during any future event as well.
Bernard, I really appreciate you taking the time to discuss this. And I think that last question, those last points that you shared are really the most important right now. While we are in some kind of a lull, at least some of us are in some kind of a lull, we need to start working to provide better systems for our providers, for our healthcare workers. And I think I want to get you back on and discuss that a little bit more in depth so we can give people the tools to start setting this up in their own places.
No, I would love to. And just again, it's like to like, you know, just send a message to the listeners too, is that, you know, speaking as a fellow colleague, really, I know that this is an extraordinary time for all of us and that, you know, taking the time to really focus on your psychological well-being really is not just a service for yourself, but also a service for your family and your patients as well. So please take care of yourselves.